Mit der ING läuft's einfach. Banking, das nebenbei passiert, kein Stress, kein Drama. In der ING-App regelst du deine Karten selbst. Wunschpin, Limits setzen, sperren mit einem Klick, alles direkt von dir gesteuert. Die ING macht Banking easy. Für dich, für dein Leben. Do your thing.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Claire Huff and Kevin Brown? First, I'll look at the background of this case, including the timeline of the crime, then move to my analysis. In August 1984, two teenagers from Rhode Island, Claire Huff and Kim Jamer, traveled to San Diego, California. They went for a two-week trip to visit Claire's grandparents. The girls spent most of their time at Torrey Pines State Beach. On August 21, the girls snuck out of the house and went to the beach at night. It was Claire's idea. Kim was frightened the entire time. The girls were under a bridge, and it was very easy for somebody to sneak up on them without being heard. Kim made Claire promise that she would never sneak out of the house again. 2 days later, on August 23, Claire decided to break that promise. By this time, Kim had already returned to Rhode Island, so 14-year-old Claire was alone. She made her way to the beach, not far from the bridge. At some point after this, she was murdered. At 5 a.m. on August 24, a man named Wallace Wheeler found Claire's body and notified the authorities. Claire's left breast had been cut off, her genitals had been cut, and her mouth was filled with sand. Investigators determined that she had been strangled. This homicide reminded the police of another murder that occurred 6 years earlier. In 1978, a 15-year-old named Barbara Nantes had been murdered only a short distance away from where Claire's body was found. The circumstances of Barbara's homicide were almost identical, even down to her mouth being filled with sand. The police thought that the same killer probably murdered both victims. Investigators focused on the man who found Claire's body, Wallace Wheeler. He was a strange individual who spent much of his day searching for cans on the beach. Claire's parents traveled from Rhode Island to California to visit the crime scene. When they were there, Wallace walked up to them and introduced himself as a psychic. When they returned to Rhode Island, he sent them long handwritten letters explaining how, a few months earlier, he had a vision of finding a body on the beach. Eventually, he claimed that Claire's spirit visited him and they had a clairvoyant relationship. Claire tried to tell Wallace who her killer was. She described him as a man with long hair and a missing ear. Despite initially seeming like a good candidate to be a killer, Wallace was ruled out as a suspect based on DNA. In 1988, he brought an end to his own life by jumping from his 13th floor apartment. It's not clear if his decision had anything to do with his temporary status as a suspect in the murder. The police did not have any other ideas about who the killer could have been. They occasionally ran different tests as they became available, looking for DNA, hoping to get a break in the case. In 2012, a new, more advanced analysis was conducted. A blood sample from Claire's genes was found to contain DNA that matched to a known violent offender named Ronald Clyde Tottrow. There would be no justice for Ronald. On August 24, 2011, exactly 27 years after Claire's body was discovered, he drowned in 3 feet of water in a river in the state of Tennessee. The authorities said it was an accident, but other people believed that Ronald did it to himself. The new analysis also found DNA from a man named Kevin Brown. It was found in seminal fluid, which had not been detected during the original investigation. It was not difficult to believe that Ronald Tatro killed Claire based on his criminal history, but Kevin Brown seemed like an unusual suspect. Kevin worked as a crime lab analyst in the San Diego Police Department from 1982 until 2002. One of his jobs was to test DNA. He started doing this in 1992. This situation reminds me of the character Dexter Morgan. He was also a crime lab analyst who committed murder. As the investigation continued, the police tried to connect Ronald to the 1978 murder of Barbara Nantes. Given the similarities between Claire's murder and Barbara's murder, they thought Ronald must have killed Barbara as well. But records indicated he was in an Arkansas jail when the crime was committed. Kevin Brown had an alibi for Barbara's murder as well, although it wasn't quite as good as being in jail. Kevin lived just over 500 miles away in Sacramento. He was in college at the time, and there was no indication that he had traveled down to San Diego. The police were puzzled by these findings. They concluded that Claire's murder must have been a copycat crime or a massive coincidence. Either way, the crimes did not share the same killer. The police focused their efforts back to Claire's murder. One strange aspect of the DNA test results from Claire's case was the presence of DNA from two different men. Did Kevin and Ronald work together? Was one of them innocent? The police didn't know. Kevin and Ronald seemed like an unlikely duo. Why would a lab technician pair up with a career criminal? Eventually, the police decided to go with the least likely theory. They believed that Kevin and Ronald were in a criminal conspiracy. They committed Claire's murder together. Investigators were confident in this theory, even though no evidence was found connecting the two men outside of the DNA.
Wir alle haben diese eine Playlist, die uns runterholt, die uns mitten im Alltag durchatmen lässt. Warum sollte Saubermachen anders sein? Mit HK reinigst du nur mit dem, was dir und deiner Umwelt gut tut. Ohne aggressive Chemie. Ohne Kompromisse bei der Wirkung. Das ist der Moment, in dem du spürst, sauber geht auch anders. Mit HK. Kraftvoll, hautfreundlich, einfach richtig. Lerne den HK-Effekt kennen. Für dein Wohlbefinden. Und ein gutes Gefühl, das bleibt. Mehr auf hk.com.
With Ronald being dead, the police put all their energy into pursuing Kevin. They interviewed him on January 9, 2014. He denied having anything to do with Claire's death and denied ever meeting Ronald Tatro. When the police started looking into Kevin's background, they only became more convinced he was guilty. Kevin had moved to San Diego in 1982 to start his job with the police department. His friends said that he was particularly shy around women, but he was highly interested in sex. When he was a teenager, he became a photographer. He would often take pictures of women who suffered from a clothing deficit. As an adult, Kevin liked going to clubs where dancers performed. These dancers also had difficulty maintaining a complete wardrobe while on stage. Kevin talked about sex all the time. As he was reading horrible descriptions of crimes in the lab, he would laugh out loud. Kevin frequently made people feel uneasy. He was so creepy that one of his female coworkers in the lab said that she never felt comfortable being alone with him. His coworkers even had a name for Kevin. They called him Kinky. Kevin's history did not grant him any favors as far as not looking guilty, but his interactions with the police during their investigation led to even more suspicion. When the police interviewed Kevin for a second time, just one day after the first interview, he told them that he remembered meeting someone named Claire in the 1980s. This differed from the story he gave them the first time. Kevin said that she was visiting San Diego with a friend. He may have had sex with her, but he couldn't be certain. However, he was certain that this was a homicide-free encounter. Kevin's friends defended him. They suggested that he was not someone who could be violent, but they acknowledged that he had been exceedingly creepy in the past. Kevin could not escape his background, and it strongly influenced the police. Kevin was very anxious about the prospect of being arrested for the murder. He was particularly concerned that when he was put in jail, terrible things would happen to him because he had worked for the police department. Kevin decided that he was not going to let this happen. On October 20, 2014, Kevin Brown brought an end to his own life in a park east of San Diego. In his home, he left a Bible open to a passage in Psalms about being falsely accused. In December of 2014, Kevin's widow filed a lawsuit against the police. In February of 2020, the jury awarded her $6 million. Now moving to my analysis. When the police department defended the civil suit, they didn't even try to make the argument that Kevin was guilty. But the prior accusation against Kevin left some people convinced that he was. Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Kevin Brown was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Kevin lived in San Diego when Claire was murdered. He moved there in 1982, and she was killed in 1984. Kevin's DNA was found on Claire's body. According to the lab, the DNA was in seminal fluid. Kevin initially said he never had contact with anybody named Claire, but a day later changed his story. Kevin had a reputation for maintaining an unusually high interest in sex and for making people feel uneasy. Moving to the exculpatory factors, it's abundantly clear that a man named Ronald Tatro killed Claire Huff. His DNA was found on a few places on Claire's body, including in blood on her jeans. The police did not deny that he killed her. They knew that Ronald was responsible. It doesn't make sense that Kevin and Ronald would work together in a criminal conspiracy. The police could not find any evidence that Kevin ever had contact with Ronald. As far as Kevin's story about having sex with a woman named Claire, his version of events did not match up with the idea that he met Claire Huff. He said that he met a woman named Claire in a hotel in downtown San Diego, but Claire Huff was with her grandparents at the beach. Furthermore, the Claire that Kevin was talking about was around 30 years old. Claire Huff was only 14. Looking at the DNA evidence, Kevin had worked in the same lab where the analysis was performed. During the time when he was there, Kevin and other technicians made donations of fluid, so to speak, so the lab would have reference samples. They had to have samples of known origin in order to test their equipment. Making personal donations was more cost-effective than purchasing them. This means that Kevin's sperm was in the lab. It's reasonable to believe that the DNA match was the result of contamination. A lab technician eventually admitted they may have pulled Kevin's sample from the refrigerator by mistake. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Kevin Brown was guilty? No, I do not believe he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I believe he was actually innocent. Contamination in the lab is the most reasonable explanation for the presence of his DNA. Moving to the last question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. The police investigating this case did not have critical thinking skills. It was clear that Kevin had nothing to do with the murder, but the police became obsessed with him because of his creepy reputation. Kevin had a history of anxiety and depression. He quickly became overwhelmed after being accused of murder. He could not handle the pressure of the police interrogating him. The police seized 14 boxes of Kevin's possessions. About a month after the seizure, the police realized that the items had no evidentiary value, yet they continued to maintain possession of them. Kevin became obsessed with getting the possessions back. In his mind, Kevin's belongings came to symbolize the murder investigation itself. The longer his possessions remained in the hands of the police, the more likely an arrest was coming. Kevin started losing weight. He was involved in 2 motor vehicle collisions, and his anxiety became out of control. Eventually, the stress became unbearable. After Kevin's death, the police continued to accuse him. They were determined to cover up their own incompetence. They would later say that they acted in good faith, but it's clear that they did not. They relentlessly pursued an innocent man and used his mental health symptoms against him by unnecessarily holding on to his property. Now moving to my final thoughts. There are 3 lessons that can be learned from this case. Number 1, the police tend to have a lot of faith in DNA testing. The science behind DNA testing is sound, but the human beings who actually conduct the testing routinely make mistakes. Even without mistakes, DNA from a non-killer can end up on a murder victim, but the police always assume that the DNA was left by the killer. There have been cases where the DNA from 5 or 10 different people was found on a murder victim, yet other evidence established that only one person committed the crime. Clearly, not every DNA contributor was guilty. Number two, this case involved two people who had unusual thoughts. Wallace Wheeler thought that he was a psychic, and Kevin Brown was obsessed with sex. Both of them turned out to be innocent. Not everybody who maintains unusual beliefs will become violent. Number three, sometimes the police simply do not have the critical thinking skills necessary to draw logical conclusions. Once they commit to a certain investigative path, they become more committed than ever to their nonsensical narrative.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.